Hello, and welcome to English for International Students, Episode 3. Today, we thought that we would just kind of introduce ourselves and share with you guys a little bit about who we are and what made us want to do this podcast. So, I'm Lindley, and I'm here with Rachel and Rachel.
Hi.
I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rachel.
Yeah. Hopefully, you guys will all learn to associate our voices with our names. Mm-hmm. As a true dedicated listener.
Yeah.
So let's start out and just say a little bit about maybe that we're from Texas Tech University and mm-hmm. what we're doing at Texas Tech and kind of what made us decide to do the podcast. So how would you guys describe that?
Which part? I'm from Texas Tech.
Yeah.
And I am going to let Rachel finish answering that okay. because I'm confused.
Okay. So yes, we are from Texas Tech. We are, Rachel and I, this is Rachel, are students in the Applied Linguistics Master's Program at Texas Tech. And Lindley was a student in that yes. program, but she has graduated. So we actually are doing this for a teaching assignment. Rachel and myself are doing this for a teaching assignment, the podcast. And it was Lindley's idea to start the podcast, and we thought that it would be a brilliant idea, and we wanted to be part of it, too. So here we sit.
Excellent.
Yeah, so yeah. Lindley, what made you think about doing this podcast?
Well, I myself am a lover of podcasts. I really like to listen to them. And I had started looking for some English podcasts to share with my students. And I found that the English learning podcasts out there seem to be a little bit focused on students at a lower level than our students. So most of the students taking our ESL classes at Texas Tech are graduate students. And so most of them speak English at a pretty advanced level, but they are still wanting to improve their English. And so I felt like the English podcasts were, they were focused on the vocabulary seemed too basic for our students and things like that. Some of the conversations in the podcast were really contrived mm-hmm. and they were honestly a little bit boring, I felt mm-hmm. like. So mm-hmm. I thought, why don't we create a podcast that uses more authentic material? So nothing that's particularly adapted for English learners so that English learners at an advanced level have something interesting to listen to. So the goal is that we will talk about things that are interesting to international students, especially graduate students, and also allow people the chance to hear some authentic English.
Nice.
Yeah.
Neat. Yes. All the mistakes I make are genuine. We did not write them down beforehand. I am this awkward and confused.
Hello. Yes. So as you can see, this is naturally occurring conversation.
Yeah. This is real, folks at home.
This is really happening right now.
Yeah, so as you said, you guys are both in the Applied Linguistics program. Yeah. So what made you guys want to study Applied Linguistics? What kind of experiences brought you to that?
Well, I am studying Applied Linguistics for several reasons. First of all, I have always loved languages, mm-hmm. linguistics, and I've wanted to study linguistics for... Well, it was my goal. I guess I first got the idea about, say, 12 years ago, maybe, to study linguistics. And then, you know, life happened, so on and so forth. And then, surprisingly, while studying Latin, I became a Latin teacher mm-hmm. at Texas Tech University. And I realized that I have a passion for teaching.
Okay.
Specifically teaching language mm-hmm. because I love language and I love teaching. So I realized that. And then I taught English for 2 years overseas. I came back and taught English for a year here in the States. And I realized that with a degree in applied linguistics, because applied linguistics kind of focuses on the application mm-hmm. of language study, which means teaching language mm-hmm. mostly. Then I could pursue that career further and continue teaching English specifically to international adults.
Yeah.
Is what I love to do.
Awesome.
Yes.
Very cool.
I started, well, I had been on a long break from school during my undergrad career, and then I decided I wanted to return to finish up and get my degree with the goal in mind of teaching English internationally. And whenever I looked at, there's a certificate that you can get along with the program.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was looking at that, and then I saw there's a master's program in applied linguistics. And I'd always enjoyed language, just listening, speaking, reading, thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
And anytime I would meet anyone who studied linguistics, I was like, that's so cool, I'm so jealous.
Mm-hmm.
And then it occurred to me, hey, why don't I do that?
You could do
it too. Because that would make you cool.
Yeah, so now I'm cool and jealous of myself.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so that's the main thing. I just, and also since I had been on such a long break from school, when I finished, I realized I would have to go back into the real world, and I'm not ready to take that step.
Mm-hmm.
And so here I am, and it's wonderful. Yay.
Well, excellent.
Nice. And what about you, Lindley?
Yeah, I feel like kind of similar to what you guys were describing. I've always enjoyed languages. I studied languages in school, mm-hmm. but as many people know, the language education in the U.S., the foreign language education, leaves a little something to be desired.
Yes.
But even still, I really enjoyed studying Spanish in high school and college. Mm-hmm. And then I had the chance to travel overseas quite a bit in the summers in high school and in college, mm-hmm. and had a really positive experience with that. And I knew that I always wanted to live overseas. So mm-hmm. as soon as I graduated from college, I moved to Jordan in the Middle East, and I went there to teach English and study Arabic.
Nice.
And yes, that was a phenomenal experience. And the way that I studied Arabic there was really different than traditional foreign language education, mm-hmm. or second language education. And it was way more, it was like a more natural approach. So kind of like how a parent raises their child and teaches them. It was a lot of cultural and linguistic content combined, and I loved it. I had such a cool experience with it. And I felt like I had a different relationship to the language and culture because of that method of teaching.
Mm-hmm.
So I came back to the U.S. and I worked in refugee resettlement for a while, and enjoyed interacting with people from other cultures, but I felt like I really missed the language learning aspect that mm-hmm. produces like cultural connection. So I really wanted to go back and get my master's degree and learn more how that process works. So I also studied in the applied linguistics program, and yeah, that it's interesting to learn more about how language learning really works. And one of our goals is to make sure that everything we do on the podcast is grounded to the best of our ability in some kind of theoretical framework. So we're looking always to improve those things. But yeah, that's what made me interested in studying applied linguistics. And I'm still really passionate about language teaching because it is different than other kinds of teaching.
Yeah.
Because it does create just a unique kind of cultural learning and interaction.
Definitely.
When it's done well.
Definitely. Yeah. So how long were you in Jordan?
A little over 2 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've never been there.
Well,
neither
you should visit.
I'd like
you
to.
Guys, let's go on a trip.
Yeah, do a trip.
Next episode, we'll be broadcasting from Amman, Jordan.
Yes, that would be great.
Yeah. Okay, so is there anything particular about language learning that interests you or fascinates you that you like to teach?
Basically everything.
Okay.
I love spoken language and just fluency oriented language teaching. I like to just talk to my students, and as a student myself, because I studied Mongolian
mm-hmm.
in Mongolia, as y'all remember in episode 2. We had Adbair, who is a Mongolian,
mm-hmm.
and he's my friend, my really good friend, And so whenever I was in Mongolia for 2 years, I studied Mongolian. And so this comes from a language learning. And I've also studied other languages as well. Like Lindley, I had a similar experience with learning Spanish. And so with language learning and language teaching, I like to focus on fluency and just talking. And so in the language classroom with my students, there's a lot of just conversation.
Yeah.
Between me and my students, between my students and each other. So I really like that. But I also love grammar. I love grammar. I am fascinated by grammar and syntax. And so I like to touch on that as well, just to explain the why. Because as adults, I think that we have like this strong desire to understand why things are the way they are. So, yeah, that's kind of what I like to focus on. What about you, Rachel?
Well, I was thinking about it, and really, I feel like I'm so new into this world, and so every time I learn any new direction, I'm like, yes, that's what I want to focus on. Historical linguistics. No. Neurological things. That's a good sign. I think I should do neurological things. Moving
forward. That's the official name of the field.
So it's really hard, but my background is in anthropology. And unfortunately, anthropological linguistics aren't what I would like them to be, but I'm interested in that, the cultural components involved in everything.
Why is anthropological linguistics not what you would like them to be?
Well, at least in the U.S., is more really specific about studying, like, the Native American languages, and it's not, like, a broad cultural thing, at least from my experience, which is not a ton, but there's just, I guess I'm learning more, there's a connection where what I'm wanting it to be is more, like, sociolinguistics, I guess, so... And there's apparently some arguing in the field between everyone about what's what. So
interesting.
But I just
I think that's like kind of with I'm not that familiar with anthropological linguistics, is that right? But it seems like maybe a lot of what they do is like recording languages that maybe haven't been recorded.
So language documentation.
I don't know. Is that true?
Yeah, a lot of it. Or trying to, because some people are really like, please don't do that. We would like you to not record our language. But it is
That's
a lot.
That's strange that they would want their language to die.
Well, anthropologically speaking, sorry, I watch Bones a lot. Well, it's not that they want their language to die, but it's just
they
want to
keep it as theirs.
Beliefs, like it's theirs, and
it shouldn't be written for somebody else.
Interesting.
Why do you need it? And I think that a good anthropologist would respect that, as hard as it might be. So, but in a, I don't know. It's just not my cup of tea.
Yeah.
These
right.
Dying languages of America.
Okay.
I think language documentation is sort of interesting. It's sad to think about a language ceasing to exist. But one of the things I like about language teaching and focusing more on the cultural aspect is recognizing like how language is always changing and not treating it like some like closed book that you can just study and learn, but that it's always changing, always adapting. And so that's the fun thing I think about including a lot of culture when you teach language is because you kind of allow students to come in and learn language as it is now so that they can really interact with people in the way that they use it. And so that's something I really enjoy. And I think I kind of like to teach the same way I like to learn Arabic. And I remember when I was studying in Jordan, I loved to know like the insider information. So I didn't want just like the cookie cutter perspective on culture, but I wanted to know like what what people really think about this idea, or even if the majority of people see this one particular holiday or issue this way, I want to know like what the resistance is to that from another group. So I like to do some of that in the classroom when I can, because I think that's a lot more fun, and it allows people to interact in a meaningful way, because when you just know the quote unquote like standard cookie cutter version of everything, that's not real. That's not really how anything looks.
I totally agree with you on that. And that's something that people are surprisingly resistant to let you in on.
Yeah.
And I had a very similar experience in Mongolia, was in every aspect, cultural and linguistic, people like didn't want me to know the non-standard way. And it wasn't because they felt like it was theirs and they wanted to keep it to themselves. It was because they felt like I wouldn't like it and it would offend me, or it would make them look bad or something like that. And so, for example, there's a phrase, or there's a word in Mongolian, which is Aymar. Aymar means scary. It means scary. But they use it, and we actually use this in English too, surprisingly, but they use it as an intensifier. Yeah. So if I say something like "amrqoy," that means really good. Literally, it means scary good.
Wow, that's weird. We do say that in English.
Yes, we say that in English too. Literally, it means scary good. Okay, but they use it, and people use it all the time. If you walk down the street, all you will hear is "amr, amr, amr" about everything. Okay, and so whenever I started using it, I had some people say, "No, no, no, that's not correct, Mongolian." Mongolians tell me that. They said, no, that's, you shouldn't say that. That's not correct, Mongolian. I was like, what do you mean? They were like, that means scary. And so it doesn't make sense. I was like, okay, but everybody says it to mean very. And so, but they were, some people were so resistant. They were like, no, 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 no. You have to use the standard forms. But the fact of the matter is, as linguists, as applied linguists, we want to be more descriptive than prescriptive.
Yeah.
What that means is, instead of saying this is how a language should be spoken, we want to look at how is a language actually spoken. And so Aymar is actually how the language is spoken. And in other ways about the culture, they tended to be like, oh, this is, they would not break down and tell me why things were the way they were, because they thought I would not like it. And then finally, I would, like, break through. I would harass people. And finally, they would be like, okay, fine. You know, we do this thing, which Americans think is weird.
Which is the best when you finally get to that knowledge. Yeah.
Yes. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. So, yeah. I relate to that.
Yeah.
Do you relate to that?
Yes. No. Well, I was trying to think, because my first and a half language is Italian, and I studied in Italy for a while, and I was trying to think if there's anything similar there, but how am I polite? No, they, I think, just assume that the rest of the world just knows everything, and their cultural things are common knowledge, and nothing is...
Really?
Yeah, there's nothing really surprising or private. I don't know. I didn't feel that way.
Like, they feel like everybody should know about pizza.
Well, everyone should know about pizza, first of all. No, but just anytime, like, if, like, we watched in one of my classes, La Dolce Vita, and there was a scene with this guy in it for, like, 5 minutes who was, like, this Italian pop star of the 60s, and I asked the teacher about him or something, and she was just like, no, it's not him. I was like, nothing, like, it's not, you, like, you're bored, like, the whole world should know who I'm talking about or something. So they're just not ever impressed if you know anything crazy. Or the three people I've met. But, yeah, but the thing with, like, the way things are actually spoken versus what you're taught, that's, I wish there were a way to just learn that, but I feel like you do need to learn the right way before you can destroy your language, like I do with English.
Yeah, and I think that in some ways, like, maybe writing a language is more convention. Well, I mean, obviously speaking is highly regulated, And I think everyone can relate to that in their native language, even if they don't know the names for all the grammar concepts. We all know when you hear something incorrect or unusual in your native language, you can say, well, okay, that doesn't make any sense to me, or that doesn't sound right. But in terms of like the way words are used, I feel like grammar is pretty steady for the most part, but the way words are used and kind of their meaning seems to change and adapt a lot. So interesting stuff. Anything else you guys want to add? Okay, I have a question for you. So we were talking about learning language in another country. I just want to ask, do you guys have any situations where you've made like an embarrassing language mistake where you said something that you didn't mean or?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay, anything you want to share?
All right. there's a lot of highly inappropriate ones, but I will share a not too terribly inappropriate
something
one.
Something G-rated.
Something G-rated, okay. So in Mongolian, the word bas means and.
Okay.
Okay. But the word bas means poop.
Oh, that's that's dangerous.
Yeah. So if you'll notice, the vowel sound is longer on the second one than the first one. So when I was first in Mongolia, I talked about poop a lot on accident. So I would say, yeah, I'm going to do this poop. I'm going to do this poop. Like, so.
Oh, that's pretty good. What about you in Italian?
Nothing that cool that I know of. And I can't really think of anything of myself, but I know I went with my friend to get gelato, and the word peach is pesca, and the word fish is pesce. And so she ordered a pesce gelato.
Oh,
and
sick.
Ew. It's not that cool of a story, but it was funny at the
time. Well, did they have that flavor?
They did not, thank goodness. Okay, no. It's not that crazy.
The words in Arabic for soup is shorba, and for mustache is shorab. Yeah.
Okay.
So I frequently ask in the grocery store where the cans of mustache are.
That's
I can never,
awesome.
In my mind, they just became confused.
Yeah.
I also, one time in Egypt, I think I've told you guys this story before, but I was leading like a group of students who were there to study, and I knew just enough Arabic to make a fool of myself, basically. And I had studied in Jordan, like the colloquial Arabic, not the classical version of Arabic, but like just how people speak on the street. And in Egypt, the dialect is quite different. Mm-hmm. So already the accent was completely different and a lot of the vocabulary was different. Mm-hmm. But I was really trying to kind of show off for these students I was responsible for.
Nice.
And this was shortly after the revolution. And so things were still a little bit kind of dicey on the street. So I was kind of on guard and I'm leading this group of students around. And I told them, guys, something huge is happening. Everyone on the street is talking about a funeral. Someone very important has died, and we need to be careful. I have no idea what's going on. We didn't know anyone yet. We had just arrived. And so I was very serious with them. You need to watch out. We need to find out what's going on as soon as possible. And they were, like, terrified. And so we get into this, like, little cafe, and I'm trying to talk to this woman and figure out what's going on. She's completely confused. I'm asking her in my Jordanian Arabic, what's this giant funeral that's happening?
Yeah.
And then I see someone ordering, and they used the same word that I thought was funeral, but it's actually I want in Egyptian Arabic. So the word in Jordanian for funeral is azza, and they were saying aiza, which is like I want in Egyptian Arabic. So I made a complete fool of myself. There was nothing going on.
Wow. And did you tell the students your mistake?
Yeah, I did.
Okay.
I did, and I was embarrassed, but, you know. What can you do? Pride comes before the fall.
That's hilarious.
Yeah,
I don't think I wouldn't have given myself up. I would have been like,
maintain.
Yeah, well, I found out that it was just a funeral for somebody, it's no big deal.
Yeah.
Or been like, we made it. I don't know how.
I rescued us. Yeah.
That's
I am a hero.
Hysterical.
Yeah. Okay, so thank you guys for sharing a little bit about yourselves.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's been wonderful.
It has.
Enjoyed speaking with you guys. So to our listeners, we definitely want to hear from you. Any funny stories where you have maybe made a mistake in English or another language, something embarrassing, you can share your comments with us on our blog at englishpodcastblog.wordpress.com, or you can also send us an email at english.podcast.ttu@gmail.com. And we would love to share some of the things that you send us with the rest of the listeners. And also, we're interested to know if your language education has been more prescriptive or descriptive, kind of what we were talking about earlier. We're always eager to hear from you. Send us an email, leave us a comment, and let us know what kinds of things you would like to hear. So again, this is Lindley,
Rachel,
and Rachel. You may have noticed that we used some expressions that you're unfamiliar with. These are English idioms, and we have provided you with a list of those idioms and what they mean, and you can find those on the blog. Thank you!